It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Markus Matuszek, an investor and entrepreneur. Markus is the founder, CEO, and chief investment officer of M17 Capital Management, a firm that invests into long-short value positions as well as private opportunities biased towards European ideas. The group also acquires ownership positions in companies and seeks to maximize their long-term potential by working with management and other shareholders. It invests its own capital and works with a select group of co-investors. Prior to M17, Markus ran asset management and advisory firm Hermes Capital Management, as well as he was a managing partner at Gabelli and Partners. He has been investing in listed securities, private companies, and real estate for more than two decades with a solid track record. Markus started his professional career with McKinsey and Company. A full bio is available on the MOI Global website. Markus, great to have you with us again this year. Thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to your presentation and would like to turn it to you now. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot, John. It's a pleasure to be again on the European Investing Summit, especially during these interesting times. I prepared this time a case that, you know, I would summarize under a good long-term opportunity. That is what we are currently looking at. But maybe, you know, if you can see the slides, let me go, you know, here too, and then we can, you know, start the presentation. Okay? So, bit of repetition, you know, to those who have already watched previously our presentation. So what is M17's general approach to investing? We try to identify interesting and upcoming changes, you know, to the industry or, you know, to the company's environment. We typically, you know, focus on well-managed companies. They can be niches, they can be in industries which are not typically invested in by, let's say, the major investors. So we are quite comfortable in that. We avoid having, you know, consensus positions because we believe that, you know, there is not really an added value for investors and typically also for ourselves. So that doesn't mean we are, you know, purely contrarian, but, you know, we like to understand the positions, and we don't like to be in crowded positions when it comes to public markets. Your market cap blind when it comes to listed securities, and fixed geographically agnostic, but of course, you know, as John mentioned, we are focused towards European ideas because we do quite a lot of due diligence also on the ground, and amongst others, you know, the pandemic, you know, limited our travel, you know, opportunities by quite a bit. Risk management for us is quite essential. We do like to generate high returns, but in order for us to do that, we need to really be able to understand, you know, the downsides, and we also would like to limit the drawdowns as much as possible. But once, you know, we feel comfortable with the position, we can definitely size it up quite considerably. The analytic approach is basically, you know, on the next slide, you know, mentioned. We work a little bit by a framework whereby we have a so-called living hypothesis tree. So, you know, we break the idea into several hypothesis elements, and then we work through those holistically. That gives us, on the one hand, actually quite a quick understanding of ideas, but then also an understanding as to what really we need to dig into and what the elements are we need to feel comfortable with. We evaluate, on the one hand, the financial, you know, elements as well as the non-financial element as mentioned here on the slide. And the last element, which we then really look at, is we try to understand to what
we differ from consensus. Because, you know, if we are, you know, different from consensus by 1 to 3%, it simply makes no sense for us to invest because everything is already baked in, or other funds have already picked up the opportunity for us. So the opportunity is not really making us, based on our experience, a lot of money. In these times, and that is, you know, different, you know, obviously, to the last couple of years, is the market environment has, you know, provided a much higher level of volatility. You know, I think many of the investors listening on Summit do experience that. And what we also see is many of the rules of thumbs, which have created negative interest rates, and QE is also creating, you know, billions and billions of dollars, come again more, you know, into the, become reality, and investors take them up more. I mean, very few are, you know, which mentioned are mentioned here on the footnotes, you know, so dividend bond yields, risk premium, and so forth. Okay, that is one thing that we definitely, you know, do see. And second of all, what we see currently is that a lot of retail investors actually, you know, are swing investors at this point in time, trading on good or bad news. The professional investors we talk to typically stay on the sidelines, and they are quite risk averse for the time being. Whatever they have to invest, of course they do, but they are not making significant moves because they are still prepared what is about to come because of recession fears here and across the pond. So they are not really interested in climbing up into positions.
Marcus?
And also what we see, you know, from talking to people, you know, to some of the family offices, is that they are shifting their strategic asset allocation still quite away from listed securities. So they're, you know, piling into private equity and private debt, which for us in consequence means we do see more and more dislocations in the market, both in the public and the private market. As John mentioned, you know, we are investing also in private opportunities. We do see that, you know, quite some dislocations are happening there as well. For the time being, we are preparing ourselves. So we are, you know, increasing our cash positions and raising cash for these opportunities. But we are still a little bit waiting. So the idea that I'm about to present, the economy, is an idea that we, you know, have looked into. But I would say that most likely the opportunity becomes even more attractive because we believe that the share price, just based on trading and a couple of other elements, will still go down. But nevertheless, the European Investing Summit is today, so here is the idea, okay? A little bit of background on the opportunity. The brands that the economy operates, you know, especially MediaMarkt and Saturn, are quite well known. I mean, they are, you know, leading consumer electronics brands. There are retail shops, well over 1,000 across multiple European countries. So the core ones, obviously, are in Germany, Austria, Spain, Italy, and the Netherlands. Also Turkey, you know, has become a market. And in those markets, MediaMarkt and Saturn combined represent typically, you know, a number one or number two position. So quite significant. In terms of size, they generate around 21 billion euros in revenues. That gives them in the overall market, in those countries, they're operating around 13 to 14% market share. If you look at the company, you know, in its history, it has generated over 250 million in normalized net profit. Why I stress normalized net profit? Obviously, Corona has had its impact. It has received also quite a bit of funding and support from government in the various countries. In these months where lockdown was enforced, of course, revenues, you know, went down, and obviously also profits went down. However, and you know, I'll come to that a bit later, also online sales picked up quite significantly. Why are we interested in looking at this company a bit closer, and what caught, you know, especially my interest? If you think about, you know, this company as to what it represents and what it does, it has more than 2.5 billion customer touch points per year. Customer touch points, be that, you know, customers checking online, you know, a product they want to buy, customers entering the shop, customers, you know, calling the online. If you translate that into, you know, how many touch points per inhabitants in the countries that they operate, that is, you know, 9, 10, 11 times of all inhabitants in the country. So, you know, for adults, you know, you can actually say safely that at least once a month, adults have a touch point with these brands, which is quite a significant, you know, fact. That, you know, every 4 weeks, you're actually looking into them, checking. Has also developed quite a strong loyalty program of, you know, 29 million members. So also on that one, they're banking quite significantly with promotions and with, you know, with newsletters and so forth. And also the numbers there look quite interesting. What Corona did is, of course, you know, skyrocketed, you know, the online sales I've mentioned. But still today, actually, the online channel is quite strongly growing. Massively, you know, growing stronger than the overall market, which, you know, analysts believe to grow by 0.4 to 0.6%. But we see here that the online channel of the economy actually is growing quite strong. You see debt, you see governance structures, you know, being simplified. That is one of the trigger points which we have seen this year happening. So there were quite some disputes going on, the founding families. So governance structure was simplified, hence you can take all now decisions much faster, and so forth. So, you know, a lot of elements which, you know, make me wonder, you know, whether this is an interesting opportunity, i.e., you know, whether we should dig deeper or not. Last but not least, you know, the valuation of the business is quite compelling at, you know, current prices compared to normalized net profits, obviously. So, you know, not taking into account, you know, the pandemic here, because that makes not make a lot of sense. The company trades at around, you know, 2.4, you know, price to earnings. And, you know, I come to that a bit later. That does not even bank in the fact that the group has some sizable minority equity investments, which even on the depressed values so far, right, this year, represent roughly half of its market cap. So, going a bit deeper as to, you know, what I've just, you know, mentioned in the first slide, you know, you see here on this page the markets that actively doing business in. It holds equity participation in a couple in France, in Russia, and Greece. In France, it's not exactly where they hold 24% of their shares. NVIDIA, which is the Russian equivalent of Sotheby's and the MediaMarkt. And I will say a little bit about that on later slides. And also they do have a joint venture, PMG Retail Market, where they hold 25%, which is quite active in Cyprus and in Greece. The revenues of the company itself is growing above market. So I mentioned before, you know, roughly around, you know, 50 basis points per year is what the market is growing. Volume-wise, it's growing actually more, but because of all these discount players and, you know, applying a constant discount approach, overall on a value basis, that logic, however, you know, the economy, you know, revenues have historically grown above the market, giving them around 13-14% market share. And still, as of today, they are, you know, slowly but steadily consolidating the market. Not that 14% or 15% would be your 60% market share, you know, if you look at other markets, but, you know, given the size, it's quite considerable. What is the company's moat? In other words, you know, from where does the company generate value, and why is it an interesting, say, value investment for us? Two facts, okay? Number one, what I call repetitive customer behavior. I have 10 touch points, 12 touch points a year. If I need something, you know, like an electronics item, or if I have, you know, the need of buying some household goods, in my mind, you know, the two brands pop up as one of the top three brands where I'm going to check. That creates repetitive customer behavior. That generates basically revenues on and on and on. Which means that the company has really generated a very attractive market position vis-a-vis, you know, of its many competitors. What, you know, the company is also doing, I would say also quite successfully, although in some categories it's still a bit early stage, they are expanding into adjacent categories. So, you know, they're going into stationery, they're going into other products and services. So, for instance, financial services, telecom, you know, can be mentioned here. So they're offering subscriptions to buyers. They are providing financing of your household goods so that, for instance, if you can make, you know, multiple installments instead of paying it up once, which we believe will help also in the recession time. To help households in financing some of its purchases. In other words, you know, repetitive customer behavior is definitely one leg of the multi-sequence. The other thing is definitely that economy finally is moving much more towards an online and omni-channel approach, away from its brick and mortar and say philosophy, which you really have pre the pandemic. That was also one of the main disputes with the founders. Really wanted to focus on that one, plus, you know, a couple of other issues that, that are not worth mentioning here. But what Corona did in a positive sense here, it pushed sales quite massively into online. So, you know, I put down here the numbers, you know, from around 14%, you know, pre-COVID level, it shot up to 33%. And even today, if you look at, you know, the last one or two quarters, it actually, you know, remained on that high level. Currently, it's around 32%. But there was, you can say, you know, instant shift online, and customers seem for the time being to stick online and also other omnichannels. What that allows the company really to do is to, number one, to reduce the number of retail stores that they have. They have a bit, you know, more than 1,000. They have closed well over 50, you know, by the time being. And also, secondly, you know, it allows them to change the outfit of the retail stores, so they can actually reduce now the sizes. They can optimize them. For other elements, they can increase, you know, logistics parts, etc. And obviously, what goes along with that is they are able to reduce also the headcounts. More than 1,000 out of roughly 25,000, they were able to reduce as a consequence of that. All in all, you know, what these changes actually are resulting in is quite an uplift in margin, expected, you know, to around 25 to potentially basis points, which doesn't sound like a lot. However, if you understand and know what these retailers are working on in terms of EBIT margin, which is around, you know, 1 to 2%, 25 to 50 basis points is actually quite a significant improvement. Furthermore, what I mentioned just briefly in the first slide is the company has really made sure that its debt capital structure provides them with ample opportunities. So they have really reduced expensive debt recently. They still have more than $1 billion of its revolving credit facility, which is entirely undrawn. Even beyond that, they have more than $700 million available as such. So they are perfectly already financed. They don't have the uncertainties and the volatilities a couple of other players in the market are facing. They are not exposed to that. They really can focus now on implementing the changes I just mentioned on the previous slide. The minority investments is you can say the icing on the cake, which however makes this investment opportunity also much safer. What I mean by that is the following. If you look at the three minority investments, which are all by itself, right, they are all in the sector and in the industry that the economy actually understands quite well. So Smagdasti is a retail chain with basically the same categories that they are in. NVIDIA is the player in Russia. It is one of the largest also players in Russia with 1,200, 1,300 stores. Heavily discounted because A, of the recession, but also because of the Russian war. And PMG Retail, which is its joint venture with the Greek Olympia Group as such. If you just take the current valuation, the current price of valuation of those three players, you come at a per share logic of roughly 61 cents. You have to understand the current economy trades of 1.25 euros, so it represents roughly half of today's share price. You can argue, right, and that is obviously one of the considerations an investor has to do, that the NVIDIA minority investment might potentially require some write-downs. That is not the case for the time being, because from what we understand, the shareholding group there is not subject to sanctions as such. It's quite a long-standing group as such, with also quite a lot of financial strength, but they have developed that through the years by basically getting bigger and bigger. And the current price, which you see, so the 89 million euros, translated, is definitely quite significantly discounted from, I would say, normalized levels. If you look at the one-year target value, and I'm talking very specifically about what analysts are expecting, about the first two investments, then the 24% shareholding would result in more than 330 million, and the end value will translate in around 326 million. Terms of value. The JV as such reaches value at the normal equity investment value, so that would not change, although obviously valuation could go up as well in the market in Cyprus increase. But if you just take that at face value, without doing a lot of digging into these investments, you would see action already today, right, with the one-year target. We would have quite a significant cushion when it comes to the economy's market share, market price, sorry. So it would represent more than 1.4 euro out of today's 1.25. You could say if the economy would be forced to sell them off, you would be able to actually get the investment back quite quickly. Or if they would simplify the shareholding structure, there is no need for that. But if you want to come to that, you could definitely count on an extra dividend coming your way. In terms of valuation, so what we have done is we looked at roughly the rest of the a decade. You know, we run, you know, a classic DCF valuation on this one, still with, if you look at 2022 numbers, quite discounted when it comes to that. We are applying already, I would say, quite a significant cost of borrowing for that, with a beta that is also higher than what you would typically attribute to these retailers. But, you know, we have taken high ones because of the cyclicality of this industry, you know, for the time being, which leads us, you know, to a WACC of around, you know, 9.5-10%. And a cost of equity of roughly 16-70%. So if you run here the valuation, just purely on the operations, so forget about the minority investments, then you do have almost a 200% uplift from current target, you know, from current prices. The question is, you know, how quickly the target price will be achieved. We don't see that happening over the course of the next few quarters. So typically, in a one-year time horizon that analysts apply, I do see personally that this most likely will take a little bit more time. However, in the meantime, the company, you know, has been allowed to resume the dividend payments, which had to be put on hold because of the support package it received during the pandemic, and that already gives you a quite dividend yield of over 13%. So you would be handsomely rewarded for just staying put and wait until the target price, you know, would be achieved. As such, you know, just a couple of, you know, trading points, and I just put that into a single, you know, slide, hopefully for those looking a bit more short-term in terms of trading. So if you look at some of the relevant calculations, you know, MACD's, RSI's, you know, directional movements, you definitely can say that for the time being, we don't see that the trend will break very quickly. The momentum is still negative. Which is for us why we also are holding currently, you know, and are just waiting, you know, for the position to enter. But on current levels, you can say definitely that the idea is an interesting one once, you know, we have found some sort of a bottom. The risk of investing, just a few ones, you know, mentioned, obviously, you know, you can say the cyclicality of revenues, you know, we're not talking of huge swings, but you do see obviously, you know, that the cooling down of consumption is still ongoing. So, you know, you should not expect outrageously high growth rates for the next couple of quarters. The company itself expects some softness in the numbers for the next 2 to 3 quarters. At least that's, you know, our reading. So you will see, you know, some cyclicality in revenues as such. And we are not sure whether, you know, online will fully compensate for that softness, similar to what you have seen, you know, during lockdown. Inflation obviously, you know, makes it quite a challenge, because it's about, you know, price leadership. It's about, you know, providing customers with a good price, and hence they're returning to you. That makes it quite a challenge, you know, once you have these inflation numbers you have in Europe with 8 to 10 or even more percent per year, especially because the company has no or very limited, you know, pricing power as such. However, and that is now to the advantage because of its size, you know, they do have purchasing, you know, scale in place and can definitely demand better prices than some of its other players. Just mentioning here one of the examples, because, you know, that is obviously quite significant. You know, if you, for instance, look at, you know, revenues in Turkey, they have, you know, grown 64% year on year. However, that is relatively, you know, well, doesn't add really a lot, because, you know, if you look at the inflation, the expected and the current inflation levels in Turkey, it is all over 80%. Actually, in real terms, the sales in Turkey have actually, you know, been reduced. ThanksGod, it only represents around 2% of group sales, so no huge impact there. But you know, that's just a very shocking example as to what inflation can do to yourself. So another one is the cost savings, which you know the economy finally is putting in place after it has sorted out its governance issues with the founding members. It has announced that it wants to really lower its cost base, by around 100 million until 2024. That already by itself would have a huge impact. If you look at normalized EPS, it would lift it around, up by around 30%. Be doubling it from current levels. Obviously, that is still on the back of getting out of Corona and getting back to normalized levels. In either case, it will be quite a significant one. So any delay in that will have an impact, obviously, on share price and other elements. I have also to say, when talking to some of the analysts, I don't see it that they are fully adding, the entire 100 million in savings to the numbers yet. I think the more realistic numbers that analysts believe is around, 40 to 60 in terms of range. So there is definitely still room for improvement on that end. The geopolitical risk is another one. So I mentioned, NVIDIA, Russian player, is a minority investment. Now there is still or any negative additional risks, I would say. But, you never know whether they might just partially, write down that position. Or maybe to get rid of it, at levels which are not those which I mentioned on the previous, as to what realistically could be achieved. Obviously, the entire supply chain issue in retailing. Last but not least, the dividend payouts, which have to be cut. Or at least, put only on hold. Pandemic finally can again be paid out. There was in February with W, so that the bank basically responsible for all supports they were allowing to do. But, again, in politics in Germany, there are discussions around another support package ready for some of the companies impact, for instance, higher energy bills and so forth. That could then, as a side effect, and a reduction or even another toll in terms of payment of dividends. As such, that could definitely be a drag to the stock price of the entire story for the for the months to come. That's it. A very short rundown in terms of the idea. John, back to you with maybe a few questions.
Thank you so much, Marcus, for the presentation. Perhaps on capital allocation at the company. Is there anything you might prioritize differently than the management is doing?
You mean capital allocation in terms of which part exactly? You mean in terms of into the operation? Because, they are not extreme in terms of capital allocation outside of their business, right? I mean, of course, besides the minority investments they have had done in the past.
Right. I also mean... things like returning capital to shareholders potentially if the shares are undervalued and so forth.
Well, what would make sense, right? That's something we have been looking into is potentially a share buyback, right? Because at these depressed levels, And with more than 1 billion RCF available, there would be room for at least a little bit of a share buyback instead of or on top of any sort of dividend payment. However, from what I understand, the covenants of the RCFs don't give you a huge amount of flexibility to use it in that way. Okay. So they would need to do that based on free cash flow available and for the last year and for part of this year. I don't see that there is a lot of flexibility on the balance sheet that basically the company can do so. However, if the share price remains on these levels or maybe even lower levels, I would definitely see room that they could, start, even if it's a limited share buyback, but, there would definitely be room for that. And I could also imagine that, the founding families, which still are cornerstone investors in the entire, now simplified group, I could definitely see that they would be, up for that, because that would mean, down the line in 2-3 years, they could pick up a higher share of dividends coming their way.
Looking forward, what would be the key data points to keep an eye on to gauge how this thesis is playing out?
Several. I mean, the more short-term, data sets that you should be looking at today is basically consumer climate. So in other words, are households buying or are there more, saving? The rise in interest rates, enforced by the various central banks is exactly that, right? I mean, they want you to go away from spending and they want you to basically, at least, temporarily put the higher emphasis on saving, right? So you would see most likely a softness in numbers, and for that, consumer climate is definitely one. Another data point which I would be looking at definitely are all these numbers around CPI development, real salary levels, right? So inflation adjusted. Because that gives you a data point as to purchasing power of households and ultimately, how much, or how big the pool is they are, able to invest in discretionary and non-discretionary spending in these categories. So that is kind of, short term, definitely.
If we were to do a pre-mortem here, in other words, let's say we are 1 or 2 years or 3 years down the road, the idea hasn't really worked out. What do you think would have been the key reason?
Well, it is a difference as to whether you ask me, to look at it in a 1 year time horizon or in a 3 year time horizon, okay? In a 1 year time horizon, the most likely reason I would say probably in hindsight, right, looking forward, so having kind of a bit of a crystal ball, is because we are still in the midst of a recession and uncertainties are still high. Probably even because in a very negative scenario, because of the war still going on between Russia and Ukraine. And hence, consumer, climate not really, having picked up very quickly, right? So that would be my response in 1 year. In 3 years, however, I would definitely expect that, or at least I hope that the war, is definitely over, so that uncertainty is gone. Hopefully, it didn't end up badly. So that is definitely, a key assumption here. And second of all, I would say that things have normalized. Normalized in the sense, that you don't have these spiking inflation rates, so that they have come down. The reason why, the thesis might not have worked out is because the inflation is not yet below the target rate of 2%, so that, you still have heightened, heightened rates and heightened inflation levels. But you see households shrinking in terms of purchasing power, real purchasing power, because, the economy is generally, struggling. And it could also be that although online has become a quite a significant part of the mix, that you are losing basically margin because, because of all the factors I just mentioned before, causes you or pushes you into even more price competition. So, the margins which you have hoped in increasing with this 100 million, cost saving program, basically, being evaporated by, giving pricing discounts.
Okay, wonderful. That's very helpful. I will leave it there, Marcus. I just encourage MOI Global members to feel free to follow up with any further thoughts or questions. Thank you so much for showing your contact information here on the screen. It's been a real pleasure having you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us again this year.
Thanks, John. It has been a pleasure. Thanks for the initiative. And I hope your members enjoy the summit.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Marcus. Goodbye for now.
Thanks. Bye-bye.